they can get married. Forget about the sex. They're not lesbians. They don't want to be screwing each other. They just want to have a strong, solid family relationship in there to raise their kids. The sex has got nothing to do with it. So these two women sit down, and they get married. And they find out that in that marriage, they watch their money right. One of the women can stay home and take care of the kids, raise the kids, get them to school, get them home from school, make sure food and clothing, all that stuff's taken care of. And the other woman can go off and hold a cash-paying job outside of the home. Yes, that is possible still. Now, of course, it's going to take some work on our part to make sure that, you know, we change this wonderful Republican economy so that we get an economy that go out and have a single breadwinner in the family that can live a middle-class lifestyle, meaning they can have a home, they can raise their kids, they can get them educated, they can make sure they have the proper medical care, that the parents can look forward to a retirement that isn't mired in extremes of poverty. You know, these are all the things. These are all the things. But it's coming. It's coming. Sorry I couldn't be a little more exciting to you folks tonight. But anyway, Rama Schneider, I guess I'm saying goodnight. Don't forget, this was all made possible by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Coming right up after us, it's Bruce Birch, All Things. Don't forget to stop by the website, homebodies.ramabahama.net. And I guess despite my really poor attitude, it's a tag I'm in, to paraphrase my good friend Tom. I'm out of here. Y'all have a good night. Bye-bye.
Hit on Radio News, I'm Bob Kincaid. A Republican is delivering some tough talk to George Bush. Pennsylvania's senior Senator Arlen Specter said on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos that Bush owes America an explanation for why he chose to release information that led to the outing of a CIA agent. Specter said it's time for Bush, quote, to come clean, unquote, about releasing the secret information. The special prosecutor in the Plame Leak investigation says the Bush administration's actions were a product of a desire for revenge against Joseph Wilson when he made it clear that Bush used phony information to justify his war against the people of Iraq. The rubber meets the road Monday in Houston. Former Enron executive Jeffrey Skilling will take the stand in his own defense in the trial of Kenneth Kennyboy Lay and himself. Skilling and Lay claim that the whole Enron debacle was someone else's fault, namely Andrew Fastow, who's already made a deal with the government and testified against the two millionaires. The Bush administration's about to take another loss in South America. In the continuing leftward swing of the continent, exit polls indicate that Ollanta Humala leads balloting among 20 candidates in the presidential field. Humala leads the pack with 29% of the vote. If elected, Humala would become just the latest in a line of elected leaders in South America who take positions diametrically opposed to George Bush. Protesters took to the streets again all over the U.S. Sunday. Immigrants protested peacefully in support of humane treatment for working people in places as diverse as Dallas, Des Moines, and St. Paul, Minnesota. More marches are planned for Monday all across the country. This is News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
McGruff, the crime dog here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is...
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride. And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write... Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time. You'll be helping me take a bite out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
Republican women in Alabama are showing how much they hate immigrants. The Alabama Federation of Republican Women is calling for an end to citizenship for everyone who's born on U.S. soil, calling the children of undocumented aliens born in America anchor babies. The Southern ladies want to overturn the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution so they can take citizenship rights away from groups they don't like. The terror threat has been lifted at the White House. A man who screamed that he was a victim of terrorism scaled the White House fence Sunday. He was quickly tackled by uniformed Secret Service agents. The man said he had information about terrorism for George Bush. His name has not yet been released. The last time the White House ignored a terrorism warning was August 6, 2001, when George Bush took a pass on a presidential daily briefing called, quote, Bin Laden determined to strike inside U.S. Americans are taking bigger and bigger hits at the gas pump. According to the Lundberg survey, the average price for a gallon of regular is $2.67. That's 17 cents higher than this time last week. Some of the price spike comes from provisions in the Bush administration's sweetheart energy bill giveaways for the oil industry. 30 women and children died in Pakistan Sunday when religious fanatics stampeded. People were attending a mosque in observance of the birth and death of Muhammad. A young girl fell on the stairs outside the mosque and screamed. That caused the crowd to go into a panic. Protesters in Nepal aren't backing down. The Nepalese are marking the end of last year of democracy in their country. They marched Sunday in opposition to the dictatorial crackdowns initiated by their king. Royal police in turn fired into the crowd for the second day in a row. Another Nepalese democracy activist died for his freedom. For the Head-On Radio Network, I'm Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back one more time again to All Things with Bruce Birch. I'm back here on the air again tonight, live with you on Sunday evening, this April the 9th, 2006. Fantastic to be with you. Wow, what a day it's been. What a weekend it's been. We had a great program last night on Fourth Estate Radio. We talked, about a lot of scary stuff, but about a lot of really good positive topics as well. One of the topics that I wanted to make sure that we cover on this program, of course, is the buzz of the day. And the buzz of the day is there's a couple of buzzes of the day. And if you got my, if you subscribe to my email list, let me start off the top. This is Bruce Birch. And you're on All Things Reconsidered with Bruce Birch. And we are being broadcast under the auspices of the Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com. So go check that out. If you want to chat with us, you can do so by going to headonradionetwork.com. Click on the little chat live button there, and it'll get you right into the chat room where the finest minds on the internet are in there talking about all kinds of neat stuff. And what else? Let's see. If you want to send me an email, you can send me an email to allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org. Fourth and final announcement, if you want to get in on the radio program, I'd love for you to call up and talk to me. You can dial 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-443-2366. This is Conversation Radio for the left side of the dial, or the left side of the aisle, or the left side of the mile, or something like that. Anyway, this is a Conversation Radio for those who have compassion for their fellow man. And speaking of compassion for our fellow man, we are going to be talking, or I have a couple of really interesting things going on tonight. Tonight's really going to be a packed show. So stay tuned. Don't miss a damned second of it, because a little bit later on in the program, I've got Michael Berg, who is going to be a guest down after the bottom half of the hour. Michael Berg is running as a Green in the state of Delaware, and he is the father of Nick Berg, who was murdered in 2003 in Iraq, and just a quite astonishing fellow. I mean, everything that I've read about Michael Berg is just fantastic, so I'm really looking forward to talking with him. That'll be a live interview, and if you want to actually get on the radio program and talk to him, you can do that. So that'll be after the 10:30 hour. Also, we will have a little bit later on, I've got an interview with a couple of the organizers of an immigrants' rights march here in North Carolina. And they're planning on having a march tomorrow in Siler City, North Carolina. Siler City is a town of about 10,000 people. They're expecting 10,000 people to show up for the march. Should be an interesting day, to say the very least. So do if you're interested in hanging around for that, that'll be right after the top of the 11 o'clock hour, that interview, as well as some talk about the immigrants' rights situation. But before we get too far into the radio program, because we have such a jam-packed show, I wanted to talk for a little while about the entire situation with the nukes. Nukes, 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 nukes. Okay. You say, Bruce, what are you talking about with nukes? Well, I'm glad you asked. Since I don't have John Fox here with me, I have to have a conversation by myself, which is fine. But check out FourthEstateRadio.com. That's the other radio program that I do with my good friend John Fox. Pretty darn good program, if I do say so myself. One of the things we talked about last night was the article by Seymour Hersh, and that's probably all over the news today. And one of the things that, you know, of course, he was on, I believe it was the Late Edition with Wolf Blitzer this morning, and talked a little bit about some of these things. And you know, what's quite astonishing about this is that Cy Hersh is willing to get on any kind of media and basically defend his assertions. Now, what's also astonishing is that Mr. Hersh has, in the past, rarely been really wrong about his assertions regarding the activities of the Bush administration. The contacts that Mr. Hersh has within the military-industrial complex, if you will, you know, have been there a lot longer than the Bush administration has been there. So, today he was on Late Edition and talked a little bit about the whole situation with the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and really
you know, he also talked about the complex that Bush has with regards to his idea that he is emperor in chief. And, you know, now what's happening with Iran? Let's look at what's happening with Iran. Iran is, American and European intelligence agencies and the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, all agree that Iran is intent on developing the capability to produce nuclear weapons. The differing is in the estimates of how long that will take. So there isn't like a, you know, there's not some nefarious thing that we're asserting that Iran is not, or I'm sorry. Iran says it's developing nuclear technology for power. The rest of the world says, okay, yeah, right. Bush himself believes that what needs to happen, according to this article that he put in the New Yorker yesterday, you can get that. As a matter of fact, what I'll do is I'll post it on our I'll add it to the blog, the blog post during the break, so you can check that article out. But in the article, Mr. Hirsch is asserting that Bush says he wants to use tactical nuclear weapons to neutralize, if you will, the nuclear threat from Iran. Bob, I'd like to hear a clip from the first clip from the late edition this morning where Mr. Hirsch is talking about Bush. If you could go ahead and roll that.
A government consultant with close ties to the civilian leadership in the Pentagon said that Bush was absolutely convinced that Iran is going to get the bomb if it is not stopped. He said that the president believes that he must do what no Democrat or Republican, if elected in the future, would have the courage to do, and that saving Iran is going to be his legacy. So what's your bottom line? You believe, based on all the reporting you did for this article, that the president of the United States is now aggressively plotting military action, a preemptive strike against Iran?
The word I hear is messianic. He absolutely thinks, as I wrote, that he's the only one now who will have the courage to do it. He's politically free. I don't think he's overwhelmingly concerned about the 06 elections, congressional elections. I think he really thinks he has a chance, and this is going to be his mission.
So we have a president that believes very strongly that his history is going to be judged on this one action. Also, you know, he does have some Joint Chiefs of Staff members who apparently are vehemently opposed to this idea. And Hirsch also spoke about this morning. Go ahead and run that clip, Bob.
What happened in this case is they gave that option, the JCS, the Joint Chiefs. And then, of course, nobody in their right mind would want to use a nuclear weapon in the Middle East because it would be, my God, totally chaotic. When the JCS, the Joint Chiefs, and the planners then wanted to walk back that option, what happened is about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the White House, people in the White House, in the Oval Office, the Vice President's office, said, no, let's keep it in the plan. That doesn't mean it's going to happen. They refused to take it out. And what I'm writing here is that if this isn't removed, and I say this very seriously, I've been around this town for 40 years, some senior officers are prepared to resign. They're that upset about the fact that this plan is kept in. The only way you can tell the White House for sure, folks, you have to use a TAC nuke. But that isn't what they were just giving the range. But it's the fact that the White House wouldn't let it go that has the JCS in an uproar.
And you're saying there are some senior military officers prepared to resign?
I'm saying that if this isn't walked back, and if the president isn't told that you cannot do it, and once the chairman of the Joint Chiefs or some senior members of the military say to the president, let's get this nuclear option off the table, it'll be taken off. He will not defy the military in a formal report. Unless something specific is told to the White House that you've got to drop the dream of a nuclear option. And that's exactly the issue I'm talking about. People have said to me that they would resign.
Do you want to name names?
Are you kidding?
I'm giving you the opportunity.
No, you know why? Because this is a punitive government right now. This is a government that is pretty much kind of has its back against the wall, as you've been saying all morning in Iraq. And in the military, you know, one thing about our military is they're terrible loyal. They're very loyal to the president, but they're getting to the edge. They're getting to the edge with not only Rumsfeld, but also with Cheney and the president.
Wow. you know, at the very least, this is scary. At the very most, it's apocalyptic. Damn it! Oh man. That totally broke the mood there for me. But the reality is that, you know, we could be facing a long, long road of that's full of war and fear and death and destruction. And folks, I don't know if you are prepared for this, you know, and I don't know that anyone could possibly be prepared for this in the United States at this point because, you know, time will tell. Time will tell. You are listening to All Things Reconsidered with Bruce Birch. This is April the 9th. If you want to get in on the radio program, you can call 1-877-443-2366. We'll be right back.
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
If you've ever been to a Gloria Estefan concert, you know that there are few stars who can match her presence, performance, and talent. The time Gloria first experienced the thrill of being on a stage performing for people was also one of the first times she learned to stretch her wings.
My fondest memory of music in school was when I was playing the clarinet. I played the clarinet from 5th to 8th grade in the school band. My mother was pretty strict and never let me go anywhere, but of course, since it was part of the school program, she allowed me to go to Tallahassee, the capital of our state here, on a competition with the school band. Of course, to me, this was incredibly exciting. It was the first time I was allowed to go out of my home without a parent. We had chaperones, but we went there, participated in a 3-day program, and it was some of the most beautiful memories I have as a child.
A PSA brought to you by MEMC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
All right, you're back on All Things with Bruce Birch. Glad to have you back with me again this evening. I've been struggling a little bit over the last few days because last week we had a program on immigration, and I struggled because I really, you know, while we had a bunch of people on the radio program who shared their opinions about immigration, I heard a lot of things during that radio program that really troubled me. And one of those things in particular, you know, really was based in the fact, or I don't want to say based in the fact, but was based in the idea that the illegal immigrant is the source, if you will, of all of our woes in our jobs and our, you know, and people can't get work and it's all their fault. It's all their fault. They're the evil ones and, you know, and they were bringing in leprosy and disease and all this, and you know, I looked at a lot of stuff and I researched some of this, and I have found that none of this has any basis in fact. What I have found, however, is that companies like Walmart have been fined millions of dollars for employing undocumented workers. What I have found is that there are businesses and corporate headquarters out there in the United States that rely, hoping against hope, that they can get undocumented workers to come work for them so they can turn a better profit. So, again, I really struggle with it. I struggle with the fact that those of us on the left aren't willing to try to work with these folks to organize them. I struggle with the idea that they are to blame, although they're showing up for the opportunities that are there. And so I left last week's show feeling a little bit down about it. Feeling a little bit disconcerted about the left in this country. I said during the program that I really believed it was all about human rights, and it was all about a living wage, and it was all about trying to create a better standard of living for all of us, not just for those of us who are naturalized or who are citizens. And I struggle with that, and I'm sure we'll talk about some of that later tonight. I was just talking about the nuclear stuff in Iran, and I wanted to throw an idea out there. If nobody's heard this idea, I just sort of picked this up a few minutes ago. And that is that if George Bush decides to use tactical nuclear weapons on what he believes, or what the war planners believe, are facilities that are creating and developing nuclear weapons or nuclear technology. If he uses nuclear weapons on those places, then how are they going to check to see if the place was radioactive afterwards? They can't. So, basically, that would prove whether or not, they could hit what could be an aspirin factory and say that they were developing nuclear technology there. Go in and check for radioactivity, and guess what? There's going to be radioactivity because they dropped a nuclear, tactical nuclear, whatever, bunker buster, or whatever they want, whatever the bomb du jour is. So, I got to tell you, though, that's damn scary, and I hope everyone is paying attention to this. And I hope the Bush administration, thank you, Cy Hirsch, if you're listening, I doubt you are, but thank you, Cy Hirsch, for bringing that out and for talking about that, because we need more people who are willing to stand up and say the things that need to be said and don't be scared about the punitive nature of the Bush regime. And along those lines, I want to read a quick email that I got earlier. Let's see if I can find it at this point. Yes, here it is. I got this earlier this morning. And this is from a friend of the show named Rick. Rick says, "So it's time to burn Iran. Okay, I'll bite. Why now? Everyone knows we are at war on two fronts, and for the most part, losing. Iraq is out of control, and blood runs in the streets like summer rain off a hot tin roof. Afghanistan is treated like a hidden, retarded child by shamed parents who want to disavow its existence. So again, why Iran now? George Bush has no credibility left and is the joke of the neighborhood. His party is reaping the whirlwind of what they have sown because of corruption, theft, and outright treason. Things are so bad for the Republican Party, even the most insane Bush party worshiper sounds like a fool or spellbound psychotic when they speak in any venue with their pious praises. Unlike the aforementioned lost souls, though, the Republican power brokers have already conceded the House, and more each day are talking about the loss of the Senate as well. But again, why Iran now? Submitted for your approval is the reasons for why Iran now. As we know, our midterm election in the United States is only 7 months away. It took the Bush administration about the same amount of time to do the propaganda rollout for the invasion of Iraq. Timing is everything, and we've all learned that you never roll out a new product in August. Reason two, if control of the Congress is won by the Democrats, then many Republicans will go to prison. Bush will be impeached, and the Republican Party will be dead for a very long time. Reason three, if a nuclear war is waged on Iran, the outcry from the Arab world will be blaring, and the cry will be for revenge. The revenge will come in the form of a mushroom cloud here in the States. Reason five, like 9/11, which gave rise to our police state and unchecked power to Bush and his junta, Bush will simply once again sit by and let the event take place and enjoy a good book with friends. After many of our fellow Americans have been vaporized, dying of radiation exposure and other things, Bush can go on TV and say, I have declared martial law. Now the United States Constitution is suspended and everything that goes with it, including the election. Reason six. Once we are under martial law, there will be no impeachments, no investigations, and no one goes to jail except those who oppose the new King for Life, George. Reason seven. Currently, the Republican-led Congress has authorized a bill, to build detention camps to house illegal immigrants and for other purposes. It goes without saying that many good Americans will hit the bricks and protest King George's convenient martial law scam, and that's exactly when all Americans will learn precisely what the term for other purposes means. Conclusion. For all that will say none of the above is possible, probable, and in place to happen, I say take a good look at your America today and compare it to your America on September 10th, 2001. Now tell me it can't happen again. I'm sure the blind will and the fools will, and for damn sure those who worship at the feet of power will, but I'm not asking them, I'm asking you. And that's from our friend Rick. I believe that's our friend Rick in Florida. Thank you, Rick. That's an excellent email. That's heavy stuff. I'm going to leave you with that thought. Think about that over the break. We should have Michael Berg coming up after the break. If you want to get in on the conversation, I'd love for you to. You can dial 1-877-443-2366. If you're listening to All Things Reconsidered, my name is Bruce Birch. We'll be right back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember it. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin. No falafel. No oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts. The issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. It's been 3 weeks now since Russ Feingold introduced his bill to censure President Bush, and 1 week since he demonstrated the legitimacy of censure at a Senate hearing. But still, most Democratic senators act like he's got the bird flu. Only Boxer and Harkin have co-sponsored the bill, with Leahy leaning in favor. The rest are hiding under their desks, which is weird since 29 Democratic senators are actually on record as favoring the censure of the president. Bill Clinton, that is. And when you compare what Clinton did to what Bush did, it's a joke. Clinton dishonored his own name. Bush dishonored the Constitution. Back in 1999, Senator Dianne Feinstein introduced the censure bill. Where is Dianne Feinstein today? And where are some of her big-name co-sponsors like Durbin, Kennedy, Kerry, and yes, even Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid? They're nowhere to be seen. One footnote on the Clinton censure. Even 9 Republicans were in favor of it, including Pete Domenici, Mitch McConnell, and Olympia Snow. So don't let them say that censure is somehow unthinkable or unconstitutional. What's unconstitutional is Bush's NSA spying. What's unthinkable is letting him get away with it. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Isaac Hayes. Candy Hayes.
All right, you're back with All Things with Bruce Birch. Glad to be back with you. Took a quick break there. That was Matt Rothschild there giving that progressive minute. Very good point about the censure. I think last week I said something about 15 senators would be supporting Feingold by now, and I guess I was wrong. Okay, I apologize. I was hoping. I'm the eternal optimist, by the way. On the line with us tonight, we have a quite a remarkable individual, and you know, I'm really, really glad that this gentleman considered coming onto our radio program and joining us. On the phone tonight, we have Michael Berg, and Michael is running for Congress in Delaware on the Green Party ticket, and is also coincidentally the father of Nick Berg, who was murdered in Iraq in 2004, And we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, why he's running for Congress, and also about, you know, the whole situation with Iraq and with Iran. Michael, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for joining us on All Things Reconsidered. I really appreciate you coming on the program. What motivated you to run for Congress?
Well, really, running for Congress is my way of trying to end the war and get some progressive legislation to help people live their lives, doing it through the system rather than just protesting against it, which is my general mode of doing things.
Okay. You have I was reading your bio, and you've been involved in progressive politics since the Vietnam War, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
When the U.S. Invaded Iraq in 2003, what was what were you doing around that time? Were you just protesting as usual, or?
Well, I was just protesting as usual, which meant. You know, going to local vigils and going to more distant ones in Washington and New York and Philadelphia.
And then your son ended up going to Iraq. Are you comfortable in talking about that at all? Or?
Sure.
Okay. I read on your website that the FBI illegally detained Nick there in March of 2004. Why did they do that?
Well, they claim that the Iraqi police arrested him, which is true. The Iraqi police arrested him. They arrested him just on a suspicion that, you know, any American traveling alone, not with Bechtels or Halliburton or the U.S. Army, was suspicious. So they hauled him into a military police station, American military police, and there, a Lieutenant Colonel William Kern, an Army lawyer, decided that Nick should have his background investigated by the FBI. He never did anything wrong. There was never a charge against him, and yet still he was held illegally for 13 days. He was not allowed to have a lawyer. He was not allowed to call home and tell us that he was okay, even though he didn't come home on the plane he was supposed to come home on.
Wow. Now, he was there on a mission of peace?
He was there on a mission of peace. He did support George Bush's policies. He felt that Saddam Hussein needed to be deposed, but he was there with a tool belt, not with a gun belt.
Sure, sure. Was he a construction worker? Or?
Well, he had a radio tower repair service. He built radio towers and repaired them, painted them, that kind of thing. And he was over there, he told me, trying to get a contract, but I know that that was only secondary for him, that he just wanted to help in the reconstruction and the rebuilding of a country whose infrastructure had been so devastated by American bombs.
Sure.
And what he would do is work about 16 hours a day going around Iraq, finding radio towers and offering to inspect them for free in hopes that at some point down the road people would get money and hire him to repair them. But he never got a cent out of it.
Wow. His assassination there was purported to be at the hands of Al-Qaeda, isn't that right? Or isn't that what was?
That's what they would have us believe. Yes.
Is there any other evidence to support anything else of that besides that? Or?
Well, the only reason I put it the way I did was because I neither believe it nor disbelieve it. The FBI is an organization whose primary mode of operation is to lie. And I know this for a fact because on March the 31st, the day after Nick was supposed to come home, two FBI agents drove up my driveway and told me that they had Nick in a prison in Mosul, Iraq. And after Nick was killed, President Bush, the FBI, and the whole Bush administration denied that the FBI had anything to do with it. So they lied one time or the other. Either the ones that told me they had them lied or the ones that told me they had nothing to do with it lied.
Wow.
So I don't really believe anything they tell me. I don't believe that Zarqawi necessarily did it, that Zarqawi necessarily is still alive, that Zarqawi necessarily even exists. As far as I know, they could be made up by the FBI. But I don't say that that's true. But I don't know. I don't really know what is true.
And it's hard now to, you know, I mean, this administration is famous for, you know, either stretching the truth, I mean, you know, lying or outright lying, or, you know, or outright admitting that they're breaking the law. So it's, you know, you can't. It's hard to tell what's exactly going on with where their positions are. You decided to run for office. When did you make this decision?
I made this decision about September of last year when I was approached by the chairperson of the Green Party of Delaware. And the way he put it was, would you seek the nomination? Well, when the chair of the Green Party of Delaware asks you if you'd seek the nomination, it sounds like a pretty good chance that I will get it, since it's decided by a committee of people.
Now, which district in Delaware is this?
It's the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, and all of them. There's only one district for Congress in Delaware.
Oh, wow. Okay. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, I think that makes it a pretty unique position.
Not pretty large state.
Unique, but a pretty interesting position.
Sure. Now, let me ask you, let's shift gears just for a second. We have a situation cranking up with Iran, and I'd like to, you know, hear what you might have to say about what is going on there presently with some of the infiltration the Army's already doing and with what it appears the Bush administration is planning to do. I don't know if you were listening to the program prior to coming on.
I listened to some of it, and I heard a lot of what's going on today.
Okay. What do you think about that, Mike?
Well, initially, I felt that all of the talk about Iran was just to keep the fear card in play. But today I got the distinct feeling that Bush is attacking Iran is a very distinct possibility. And I'm thinking, well, support for the war against Iraq is really waning very quickly, and he's just moving on to the next one. You know, kind of reminds me of Hitler hitting, Poland first, and then eventually, you know, getting to Czechoslovakia and invading France and Italy and all these other countries, Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran. What's this man trying to do?
Besides, I think, trying to take over the Middle East, I mean, it seems like Iran is the only country left there. Well, maybe aside from you know, Syria, but maybe that's not a stretch there. Iran seems to be the only country left that either isn't, A, in our pocket, B, that we haven't taken over, or C, you know, that we're trading nuclear secrets to. They're the only country really that represents complete independence over there.
That's right.
You know, now I heard some scuttlebutt about the possibility that they would be going over to the euro. Is that true, or have you heard anything about that?
No, I hadn't heard that.
Okay, because I had understood that that was part of the reason, or at least that was one of the financial considerations with Iraq as well, but. So we have this eternal war for eternal peace kind of thing going on.
Yeah, oxymoron.
You know, well, and it is. It absolutely is.
Preemptive war.
I also was interested in getting your take on the immigration situation within the U.S. Now, you know, we've had all the marches, and actually tomorrow is going to be a huge day for rallies around the United States. What's your position on, you know, with regard to immigration and those who are coming up from Latin America?
Well, you know, I think that we're all citizens of one planet. I think that we should be borderless. I don't think that there are too many people in your listening audience, certainly a very small percentage, who can't say that they're descendants of immigrants or immigrants themselves. Also, I think of our southern border. I think of the southern states of California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. All at one time belonged to Mexico. We just marched in and took those states, and now we're telling the people that we took it from that you can't come here. I don't get it. I think that the illegals are the illegal employers who tried to employ these people far below minimum wage and without proper safety and without any benefits at all. I think they're the ones we ought to be cracking down on, not on the people who are just trying to make a decent wage so that they can support their families and come home to them each night.
I couldn't have said it better if I had if I had written it out. I totally agree with you there. I think that, again, and actually we're presented with a unique situation in which we could actually almost reinvigorate the unions in this country if the right cards were played at the right time and you know, we had the ability to organize these folks as well in illegal, you know, in a legal fashion.
Right. Well, maybe that's the reason why they're doing what they're doing.
It could very well be. It could very well be. I really wanted to ask you one of my larger questions. Also, was I wanted to know why the Greens instead of the Democrats?
Well, because the Democrats are saying the same things that the Republicans are saying. I just heard. Matt Rothschild, right before I went on, you know, there aren't any Democrats, or just one or two of them, that are supporting Feingold's bill to censure Bush. What's that all about? There aren't any Democrats in the Senate at all who didn't vote for the last bill to fund the war in Iraq. Not even Joe Biden from Delaware here where I live, who claims that he's going to run in 2008 as an anti-war candidate. He's not anti-war. He votes to fund it. There's essentially no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans in what they actually do. If you listen to what they say, you might be fooled. But if you look at how they vote and what they vote on, what they do, there isn't any difference. I was actually approached by the Democrats to run on their ticket, and I said no. My friend said, "Huh, look at the machine, look at the money." And I said, "Yeah, but look at the message. It's not my message. I'm not a politician. I am in this to drive home a message. I'm in it to win. I'm in it to end this war and to get programs that benefit the people like you and me." It's those things that are of the utmost importance to me, not gaining the political seat.
Okay. Well, can you stick around for a minute?
Sure.
All right. Well, we're going to take a very quick break, and then we'll be right back. This is Bruce Birch. I'm presently talking with Michael Berg, who is running as a Green in the in Delaware for U.S. Congress. And let's see, it's about 46 minutes after the hour. This is All Things Reconsidered. If you want to get in on the radio program, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. We'll be right back.
fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Hello?
Hi, Bill? This is George Dewey from up the street.
Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Good, good. Say, I noticed you've been walking to work these days instead of driving.
Hmm.
And I don't quite know how to say this, but...
But what?
But your butt. Your buttocks. Your butt. I think I found your butt on my front lawn. Have you recently lost it?
As a matter of fact, I have, George. It's about time someone noticed.
Well, it was kind of hard to miss, if you know what I mean. Anyways, would you like it back?
Would I like it back? No, not really.
So it's okay if I throw it out?
Sure, that's fine. Take it easy, George.
Small step number 8. Walk instead of driving whenever you can. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You're back on All Things Reconsidered with Bruce Birch. We've been talking with Michael Berg, who is running for Congress in Delaware with the Green Party. And Michael, I'm really kind of amazed, first of all, that your reaction to the war has remained as steadfast as it has been, given what happened to Nick. Have you ever been approached by any of those who are the pro-war folks and tried to get you to align with their side at all?
Well, no, because I think people knew pretty well right from the beginning where I stood. The first thing I ever said publicly was that Nicholas Berg died for the sins of George Bush and Donald Rumsfeld, and it outraged those people that supported the war, and it made the people who were against the war start calling me up right away and asking me to come speak here and come speak there, and I've been doing that ever since. Never was approached by anyone who was against the war. I mean, who was for the war.
Who's for the war. Tell me about your, some of the domestic ideas that you have as far as, like, health care and child care and child, living wages, et cetera.
Well, I think one of the most important things is to get single-payer health care for everybody in this country, regardless of how much money that they make. I think the war is a more immediate threat, but I think that a bigger threat is that people are going to run out of health care options, not be able to buy medications that their doctors say they need. Another program that I think we need to save is Social Security. I think it would be a pretty simple thing to save it just by eliminating the ceiling and raising the floor. And I think that way we would have a progressive tax instead of a retrogressive tax, and Social Security could be saved. Education. I was a teacher for 35 years. And we had great programs in the 60s and 70s. We had Title I and Title IX and bilingual programs and special ed programs, and we did great things with the kids. Today, our public schools are falling apart because of George Bush's No Child Left Behind, which is just a front to schools from getting federal funds. The schools in Delaware are falling apart. They're so underfunded that people started pulling their kids out of them. And when they did that, the schools fell apart even more. And so more people pulled their kids out.
Were you still teaching when No Child Left Behind took effect?
The very beginning of it. I guess maybe I saw it coming, and it was a good time to leave because funds were being pulled.
Sure.
Another program where we've already seen the results of the Bush policies as far as the infrastructure of this country is concerned. To save money, he pulled the money that goes into maintaining the levees that hold the Mississippi River back from rolling over New Orleans. And then when the hurricane came along, we all saw what happened. So it cost us not only in money far more dearly than it would have cost to just maintain the levees, but in human life as well. And then when you think about the hurricane, when you think about the tornadoes that swept the central part of the country and the south, well, probably fairly close to you in Tennessee, this weekend, you start thinking, you know, what's up with the weather? What's up with the weather is that greenhouse gases are causing global warming. Time Magazine and ABC TV are even saying it, so there's got to be some truth to it if they're saying it. Out of 1,000 scientists, you're lucky if you can get 3 to disagree that it's a big problem, and yet we're not doing anything about it. And that's probably the greatest threat of all, but in that it's not an immediate threat. We get distracted by things like the war and health care and Social Security and everything else.
Sure.
That's pretty much my platform.
Well, you got a fantastic platform, man. I wish you were running in North Carolina.
Well, you know, in a sense I am, because I'll be running for the United States Congress, and if you support my views, it's worth your while to support me. Which you can do. Can I say my website?
Absolutely.
It's bergforcongress.us. And, you know, if you support me, there will be a voice in Congress that you might prefer to what's in there now.
And tell me about your opposition for a minute.
Well, the Republican who is the incumbent, his name Mike Castle, and he has been the incumbent. He has been he has held the seat for 7 terms, and before that he was governor twice. And he's pretty popular. He's considered a moderate, but he supports Bush 9 times out of 10. He votes with him. And the Democrat is unknown virtually. Like I said, I was offered the position before. I was offered to be encouraged to run for it before he was, and what I call him is kind of a throwaway candidate. The Democrats don't feel like they can waste any of their resources against Mike Castle, so they just get someone that they won't ever want to run again and let him run and get his name in the loser column.
Right. Now, have you done any polling yet to see, you know, what you're up against at this point?
No, because the others haven't really geared up yet. Delaware's a strange state. The Green Party will hold its caucus on May the 13th, and at that time I will either be nominated or not nominated. I'm very sure that I will be nominated. But the Democrats and the Republicans won't hold a primary until next September.
Wow.
Which is practically, you know, in the election.
Right. That's right at the election.
Yeah, right. But I think both of them, I think all 3 of us are going to pretty much go unopposed. So I think everyone really knows what the situation is. But somehow or other, things haven't really geared up. You know, you don't hear too much talk about the issues at that level yet.
Sure. I noticed on your website that you have, I'm actually on your website now, and I was noticing there that you have various ways that people can be aware of some of the things that's going on with you and your campaign. You want to talk about a little bit about how people can stay up on what's, how to get in touch with you and how to remain in contact with your campaign?
Well, you know, again, that website, bergforcongress.us, is the best way. If people want to contribute, they can contribute right there. If they want to volunteer, if they're close enough to help, or if they can do something that can be done remotely, they can do it right on that website. On that website, there's also an address that you can send contributions to if you don't have internet capabilities, and a couple of phone numbers.
Okay. Fantastic. Michael Berg, thank you so much for being a part of All Things Reconsidered tonight, and I will definitely stay apprised of what's going on with your campaign, and maybe toward the end of the summer, or maybe, who knows, maybe in the middle of the summer, we'll get back in touch and see how things are going.
That'd be great.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Michael Berg of Delaware, running for Congress on the Green Party ticket, trying to bring real sense back to Washington. Michael Berg, thank you for joining us tonight. And this is All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch. We got news right at the top of the hour. Your phone calls are welcome. 1-877-443-2366 is the number. We'll be right back.
On Radio News, I'm Bob Kincaid. Tough talk from a Republican for George Bush. Pennsylvania Senator Arlen Specter said on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos that Bush owes America an explanation for why he chose to release information that led to the outing of a CIA agent. Specter said it's time for Bush, quote, to come clean about releasing the secret information. The special prosecutor in the Flame Leak investigation says in court filings that the Bush administration's actions were a product of the desire for revenge against Joseph Wilson when he made it clear that Bush used false information to justify his war against the people of Iraq. Protesters took to the streets again all over the U.S. on Sunday. Immigrants protested peacefully in support of humane treatment for working people in places as diverse as Dallas, Des Moines, and St. Paul, Minnesota. More marches are planned for Monday all across the country. And also on Monday, the rubber meets the road in Houston. Former Enron executive Jeffrey Skilling will take the stand in his own defense in his criminal trial alongside Kenneth Kenny Boy Lay. Skilling and Lay claim the whole Enron debacle is someone else's fault, namely Andrew Fastow, who's already made a deal with the government and testified against the two millionaires. The Bush administration is about to take another loss in South America. The continuing leftward swing of the continent, exit polls indicate that Ollanta Humala is leading the balloting among 20 candidates in the presidential field. Humala leads the pack with 29% of the vote. If elected, Humala would become just the latest in a line of elected leaders in South America who take positions opposed to George Bush, including Evo Morales in Bolivia and Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. Republican women in Alabama are showing how much they despise immigrants. The Alabama Federation of Republican Women is calling for an end to citizenship for children of immigrants who are born on U.S. soil. Calling the children of undocumented aliens anchor babies, The Southern ladies want to overturn the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution so they can take citizenship rights away from groups that they don't like. 30 women and children died in Pakistan Sunday when religious fanatics stampeded. People were attending a mosque in observance of the birth and death of Muhammad when the disaster occurred. This is News on the Horn, the head-on radio network.
Planet Check. Planet Check.
He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charles Ford, founder of Grassoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told me that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fat, some flour, flax, hemp. Seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel, not only their feed. Small towns could be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more EcoWrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grassoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
A terror threat has been lifted at the White House. A man whose name has not yet been released screamed that he was a victim of terrorism and then scaled the White House fence on Sunday. He was quickly tackled by uniformed Secret Service agents. The man said he had information about terrorism for George Bush. The last time the White House ignored a terrorism warning was August 6, 2001, when George Bush took a pass on a presidential daily briefing called, quote, Bin Laden, determined to strike inside U.S. Americans are taking bigger and bigger hits at the gas pump. According to the Lundberg survey, the average price for a gallon of regular is $2.67. That's 17 cents higher than the last survey 2 weeks ago. Some of the price spike is attributable to provisions in the Bush administration's sweetheart energy bill giveaways for the oil companies. Protesters in Nepal aren't backing down. The Nepalese are marking the end last year of democracy in their country. They marched Sunday in opposition to the dictatorial crackdowns initiated by their king. Royal police, in turn, fired into the crowd for the second day in a row. Another Nepalese democracy activist died for his freedom. Protesters say they won't leave the streets until the king leaves and gives them back their liberty. Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak woke up and smelled the coffee Saturday. Mubarak said that Iraq is in a civil war and that the Shia majority is under the influence of Iran's radical fundamentalists. Egypt's president made the comments in an interview with Al Arabiya Network. The Shia-dominated Iraqi government quickly responded, "No, we aren't," and added it was astonished anyone would think that they're having a civil war. For the Head-On Radio Network, I'm Bob Kincaid.
You're back on with All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch, and I'm your host for the evening. We just had a wonderful interview with Michael Berg of Delaware. Michael is the father of Nick Berg, who was murdered in Iraq. And I got to say, Mr. Berg, if you're still listening, thank you so much for joining our program and being a part of All Things Reconsidered this evening. Definitely, we'll plan to have you back on the radio program again at sometime in the near future. Some of the views that he was espousing were very close to some of the things that we've talked about here. So thank you, Mr. Berg, for coming on. I wanted to move on over to some other topics this evening. You know, one of the things that Mr. Berg and I talked about was the immigration situation. And this was a pretty hot topic last week. You know, and
We'll get along to that in just a moment. I do have a caller on line one that I wanted to bring into the program. Luke from Knoxville, Tennessee. Luke, how are you doing tonight? Hello, Luke. You there?
Hi, Bruce.
Oh, there you are. Hey, buddy. How you doing tonight?
No problem. Fine. I really enjoyed that with Mr. Berg. I tell you what, I just go back to always thinking about the when they first went into Iraq. I remember the networks were all covering it, and they went to this it was after the Afghanistan, and they were going into Iraq, and they went and they were talking to some of the families. And I always remember this one father out there, and he was just blaming George Bush right, left, and center, and he wasn't on the air 10 seconds before they cut him off.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that Mr. Berg's being heard.
Well, I'm glad
he's getting to me today was listening to all this stuff on the things they're talking about the leak thing. And hearing, I want you to call it misdirection, the lies. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, first thing was they said, well, this didn't have anything to do with Valerie Plame. It's like, well, of course it did. It wasn't Valerie Plame's name being mentioned, but it had to do with the whole thing. This was to discredit Joe Wilson. I mean, you know, and all this was led up to the release of Valerie Plame's name. So. I was just amazed to hear him saying, "Well, he never authorized him to release Joe Wilson's name." It's like that isn't what this part of it's about. You know, this is just the lead up to it.
Well, I think the facts that are coming out slowly actually refute that the president did authorize. Well, at least based in what the court papers said, the president authorized Cheney to do his dirty work.
Oh yeah. I mean, I mean, I don't know that's what happened. I'm just saying that this particular part of it, and I don't think we've seen all of it yet. I think Fitzgerald's going to let a little bit out at a time.
Sure.
And I think what this had to do was that NIE report. And, you know what I mean? It's sort of like it's amazing that, well, Bush declassified it, but apparently I didn't know you could declassify line by line in these reports, but apparently you can. Because apparently there was only certain parts of this report released. You know, it's like, oh, the part where the Energy Department says they couldn't have used those tubes for a centrifuge. Well, no, we can't release that part. So, you know, that's the wrong part. We can't release that, you know.
Yeah, and you know, there's actually, you know, tying that into what's going on with Iran right now, you know, that's what she was working on.
Yeah.
Apparently, was that she was working on.
Well, and the thing of it is they talk about her so much, and I mean, she's very important in this. But I like listening to Randy Rhodes, and I love it when she gets in talking about Brewster Jennings.
Sure.
And most people don't realize that that's really where probably more damage was done.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because
absolutely.
Like, nobody, if you'd have just said Valerie Wilson, well, that's somebody named Valerie Wilson. You know what I mean? You don't know who that is, but when Novak released that second op-ed and linked her to Brewster Jennings, like Randy says, every security operation around the world said anybody connected with Brewster Jennings off the list, you know, or if they're in the country, round them up. We don't know what's happened. You know what I mean? There could have been
exactly
people from there that's just been disappeared, as they say.
Well, and I'd like to know, I'm sure that there's a list somewhere in the Pentagon of how many or in the CIA,
mm-hmm.
you know, of the people that were lost as a result of that.
Well, you know, the
because you
got,
know someone had to, you know someone
well,
probably
there.
Got
it, it'll
got
never
off.
Be released, not until we get somebody else up. But I tell you the one thing that got me, and I was running across some old file or something, or an old story, and I hit the name, it made me think about this. All these things they're talking about this thing, you know, with Bush and all this, I tell you somebody who's been, in my opinion, been exonerated, but you don't hear it mentioned. Do you remember right after the Iraq War started, Jim McDermott?
Yeah.
You know, where he went over there and came back and said that the Bush administration was lying and they'd tell any lie necessary, and he got pilloried.
Yes, he
did. You know what I mean? He was just drug over the coals. And it turns out that as it's gone along, Jim McDermott was telling the whole truth. You know what
now
I mean?
He's a congressman, right?
I mean, a congressman, I'm going to think, from Washington State.
Yeah, I think that sounds right.
But I just remember at that time, I mean, there were people wanting to drive him out of the Congress. You know what I mean? There were people saying he should have been thrown out. And I'm just amazed, you know what I mean, that you know, as it's coming out, it's just everything, you know. I really want to see somebody, and I know there's some place out there, probably a good blog spot that's got it. I would love to see, like, say, some of the timelines on some of this stuff, because I think that's where you really get it, is when you see it all laid out.
Yeah. You know, well, there are actually several of them out there, and, you know, I'll tell you what I'll do is through this week, I'll see if I can't round some of those up and stick them on my website. In the show preview page where I put the most recent links that I have.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. You know, I'll try to see what I can round up. I know that there's one website that I remember in particular called 911timeline.org
mm-hmm.
that tied in a lot of the, well, going back into the 70s and coming all the way back from the 70s, and, you know, including all the ties between the Bin Ladens and the Bushes and, you know, and bringing all of it full circle, and I'm sure that they probably, you know, brought it up to where we are right now.
That's what we really need. I'll say somebody, is that just so we see it all laid out, you know what I mean, one right after the other, and just see all the things, you know what I mean? Because, like I say, we all have, unfortunately, you know, small, shorter attention spans. I mean, we can't remember everything about it. And it's just amazing all the things probably in this administration that's gone on that's fallen in our memory holes, you know what I mean? I mean, I still go back to the first day when they went into there and said, oh, they've torn up the White House. And it's like, oh, but we can't allow any cameras in to see any of it. and we can't show you the bills where we had to have all the work replaced. Oh, we can't show you those bills, you know what I mean, where
right,
they had
right.
to get stuff to repair it. I always remember was it the people at Compaq or something gave them a whole bunch of computers because they said that they destroyed computers. And all this stuff, but apparently no one ever, you know, got rid of computers, apparently. So, I'm, you know, it just always got to it, so.
Well,
I'm sorry.
I was going to say, and the reality is, as Michael Berg pointed out a little while ago, that, you know, everything that they say is hedged. I mean, you know, there's nothing that comes out of the Bush administration that is not motivated by political interest. They cannot tell the truth in any way, shape, or form unless it's going to suit them politically. And you know what? It's the truth at this point doesn't in any way. So what we're going to see is, well, as you said, misdirection, what I would call, you know, selective truth, right?
The part that makes them look good, anything that makes them look good will not be told. But, you know, it's like somebody was saying, they were talking last week about Tom DeLay. They said, well, so the Bush people aren't really, you know, really seeming to support him. You know what I mean? They're kind of backing off. I said, go back to look at Ken Lay. When somebody cannot do George Bush any good, he throws them under the bus. You know what I mean? If you can help him, he'll support him. But if he can't, if you can't do him any good, you're gone. Because, like I say, Mr. Lay may have had something to do with Mr. Bush in the past. it's like, yeah, all those. I want to see all those emails when I finally ever file them all the ones from George to Kenny Boy.
Yeah, or the, you know, the fact that, or they said that Bush never met Abramoff, and yet there's two pictures that prove otherwise.
Well, I always love that the videotape with DeLay where he says, well, we weren't that close of friends. They show that one where they're meeting in the airport, you know, down there. So, but I tell you what, I still say that this year the Democrats should keep it nice and simple, and the best thing I still think for a bumper sticker is just a simple two words, had enough.
Had enough. Yeah, that's a good idea, had enough. That's a good idea. I like that. It's a great idea. You know what? You might be the guy that they're looking for there at the DNC, my friend.
Oh, no, they aren't looking for anybody with any ideas. Now, that could throw them off. You gotta... All right, I'm going to have somebody else get in here and talk. Bruce, I'm sorry.
Okay. Thanks, Luke, man. Appreciate you calling in tonight. We'll definitely talk to you sometime in the very near future. All right. That was our good friend Luke from Knoxville, Tennessee, online there on the other side of our radio program. And Luke, you know, that's a good idea. Had enough. Well, you know, and I've heard about this. I wonder why, you know, we had a caller on last night that was talking about, or I read something, I'm trying to remember where I saw this, that the Democratic Party leaders met in D.C. and decided that they weren't going to do anything, that they were going to sit back and wait for the Republicans to implode. If you're standing on principle at all times, do you have to change your platform? I wonder about that. If you're standing on principle at all times, do you have to change your platform? Well, I would say yes to a certain degree, because the reality is that the Democrats have, especially Hillary, have supported this war when they really don't, you know, where it's really just not the right thing to do. My name's Bruce Birch. This is All Things Reconsidered. We'll be right back.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
WithEstateRadio.com.
Lottie in the chat room has fixed himself some stuffed pork chops with apple raisin walnut chutney.
You, me, Grace, Rama.
Mango chutney.
Hey, speaking of that,
it's all you need.
Mustard seed?
Mustard seed, yeah. That article.
It's not the same as mustard gas.
Well, it's pretty close. Mustard gas.
Join
mustard
Grace gas and Rama, homebodies, Sunday evenings, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network. It's food for thought.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2-new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Please listen to me, Marvin Hamlisch. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
You're back on All Things Reconsidered with Bruce Birch, and I can sit and listen to that music all night, so I better get back to work here.
Get back to work.
Okay, back on the job. I'm back on the job, folks. We've been talking about a lot of different things. You know, I was talking about right before we were talking to Luke there and talking about the entire Valerie Plame leak situation, and I've got some audio that I'm going to be running a little bit later. In the program regarding that. But before I do that, what I wanted to do was to, let's see. Well, I don't know if I'm going to have time to run that. So let's go ahead and do that. Let's see here. Let's go ahead. I want to, Bob, let's see. Everything kind of has gotten strange now. Right after the bottom of the hour, we're going to do a little piece. We're going to play an interview that I did earlier today with some of the organizers of an immigration march here in North Carolina. And the folks who are putting that one together here in North Carolina have really done a fantastic job. They've got a bunch of volunteers with it. But before I do that, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Bush leaker situation there in D.C. And before I go too far along, Bob, I'd really like if you could play that audio that I had queued up for you.
If there's a leak out of my administration, I want to know who it is. If the person has violated law, the person will be taken care of.
Really? Okay, Well, you know, what's interesting about that is that apparently the person that may have violated the law it could be the very person who just gave that statement. And that statement, by the way, was back in, I believe, 2003. Bob, go ahead and roll the next clip there, if you would.
Let me turn you to another subject, if I can, Senator. As you know, there was considerable excitement in Washington at the end of the week about a report or a statement by the special prosecutor in the Valerie Plame Leak case, a filing he made that indicated that the president had authorized the disclosure of what had been classified information to bolster the case for going into Iraq. Is it your view that what the president and the vice president as well have did in that matter constituted a leak?
I don't know, because all of the facts aren't out, and I think that it is necessary for the president and the vice president to tell the American people exactly what happened. Brett, I think too often we jump to conclusions before we know what all of the facts are, and I'm not about to condemn or criticize anybody, but I do say that there's been enough of a showing here with what's been filed of record in court that the President of the United States owes a specific explanation to the American people.
About the release of this information or what?
Well, he about exactly what he did. The President has the authority to declassify information. So in a technical sense, if he looked at it, he could say, if this is declassified, and make a disclosure of it. There have been a number of reports, most recently I heard just this morning, that the president didn't tell the vice president specifically what to do, but just said, get it out. And we don't know precisely what the vice president did. And as usual, Britt, the devil is in the details. And I think that that there has to be a detailed explanation precisely as to what Vice President Cheney did, what the president said to him, and an explanation from the president as to what he said, so that it can be evaluated. The president may be entirely in the clear, and it may turn out that he had the authority to make the disclosures which were made, but that it was not the right way to go about it, because we ought not to have leaks in government. We ought not to have them. And the president has justifiably criticized the Congress for leaking, and of course the White House has leaked. But we ought to get to the bottom of it so it can be evaluated again by the American people.
If there's a leak out of my administration, I want to know who it is. If the person has violated law, the person will be taken care of.
There were people that were out there making irresponsible accusations that intelligence was manipulated or that intelligence was misused. There's been no evidence to back that up whatsoever.
They're good individuals. They're important members of our White House team. And that's why I spoke with them, so that I could come back to you and say that they were not involved. I had no doubt of that in the beginning, but I like to check my information to make sure it's accurate before I report back to you, and that's exactly what I did.
If there's a leak out of my administration, I want to know who it is. If the person has violated law, the person will be taken care of.
Oh, joy. I think the president wants to go to jail. Shall we send letters, perhaps invitations? Do we need to send them engraved, or should we perhaps just send them on regular, marbleized paper, perhaps? I don't know that I need to say anything more about that topic tonight. My name is Bruce Birch. This is All Things Reconsidered. You are listening to Radio for Real People. If you want to get in on the radio program, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366. We'll be right back.
Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. I was in a bar the other day, and the TV was on, and some footage from the French riots were being shown, and the bartender proceeded to mock the French in that lowbrow way that Jay Leno does, or Fox News, for that matter, or the New York Times, which even in its news columns derides the French as foolish for not getting on board the pro-corporate globalization train. No, they're not. What we've been seeing in the streets of Paris these past 5 weeks is nothing short of a rebellion against the reign of capital. And this kind of rebellion is so foreign to us here in the U.S. that we can't even comprehend it. Easier, then, just to mock it. The French protesters don't want employers to have the right to dismiss anyone under 26 without cause for the first 2 years on the job. Maybe we can't relate to the protests because we've been under the heel of just such laws forever. In most states, it's perfectly legal for bosses to boot people out the door without cause at any age and no matter how long they've been working there. As Barbara Ehrenreich points out, this is called employment at will, at the employer's will, that is. In France, at least, they're challenging that power. Instead of mocking them, we'd do well to challenge that power, too. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
All right, you're back on All Things Reconsidered with Bruce Birch. Glad to be back with you. You know, that last segment, I just, you know, I decided to let the audio, you know, as they used to say in the old days with the Bell South Yellow Pages, let your fingers do the walking while I'm letting the audio do the talking. I'm thinking that the president, can probably pretty much tell us exactly what he did. And I'm thinking that there's probably enough audio out there that I don't know that it's necessary to make him go out and do, you know, the whole court thing and testifying and all that. I think that the court of public opinion already has made a decision regarding this president. He has, created enough problems. He's created enough problems. It's going to be hard for him to get out of this. I mean, it really is. It's going to be hard for him to get out of this. I'm thinking that Cheney will be the first one to go, though. All right. Definitely wanted to get over to this audio from the immigrant situation that is going on around the nation tomorrow. There will be marches all over the place. And I want to play this. I got an interview today with a couple of the organizers. One, Marisa, oh gosh, Marisa, no, I'm sorry, Marisol McGee, and I've got their cards. I'll tell you what I'll do is, Bob, if you want to just go ahead and run that audio, the Siler City rally audio, and I'll get their names.
Offered to stop in town, even though I was about to leave the country and didn't have a lot of time to organize much, I decided we need to take hold of this opportunity of people coming to our town to raise awareness on issues of workers' rights and immigration reform and do an event with them. And then at staff level, we decided, let's do a march, let's do a rally. And that's how it got started. And then it grew as the April 10th event, the National Day of Action, mm-hmm. Came about.
Did you... When you thought about doing it, how many people were you envisioning when you first had the thought?
When we first had the thought, probably 100, and then as we started organizing it, we said, I think we can get 500 to 1,000. So, just from the town. Mm-hmm. And that was probably a low ball, even at that time.
Okay.
But,
last week? Well, how long have you been?
Since Monday.
Okay, so in every day that numbers could probably gone up, 1,000, I guess?
I think that's what's really interesting about this event is that, you know, this is really a groundswelling. Mm-hmm. We realize as organizers in our organizations where we get paid to do this for a living that the community had decided they were rallying, the community had decided that they were marching, and that our role in that was more to just sort of ensure their safety and sort of corral that energy and really
respond to what the community had decided to do.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So this was, so once...
Because people across the state were looking for events to go to for April 10th and were looking for an event that would be a statewide event. And so that's how we came about that we decided that Siler City would be the statewide event. Since we had a tiny little bit headway starting with the pilgrimage organizing, and also because of the things I mentioned at the meeting, that Siler City is really an example in the good and the bad ways of the changes that are happening in our state and in our nation.
Okay, in what good ways?
Good ways?
Yeah.
An incredible influx of very hard-working people, family-oriented people that are building a community, that are opening businesses. Just in Siler City in the last 10 years, we have 20 Latino-owned businesses in town. That's not counting the whole county. That's just the town of Siler City.
How many people are in Siler City? What's the population?
Extended town jurisdiction, 10,000.
So 10,000 people, and okay. That's hard to wrap my mind around, that there's a 10,000 people population there, and you're expecting 10,000 people to show up?
That's right.
Wow. Okay, so we talked a little bit about what to expect there. You're expecting 10,000?
Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard for us to say how many people will be there, because it's really... You know, the word is out. Just in Siler City, we have 5,000 Latinos. The population is 50% of the town is Latino. So just in our town, we're expecting a majority of the people to attend.
Okay.
And with people coming from all over the state, it's hard to give you exact numbers. 10,000 is probably a good guess.
Okay.
I was just going to say that there's also been calls from different plants in the area that are saying that they're actually shutting down their plants and are expecting busloads of people from their plant and their factory to be coming to Siler City.
Have you had any kind of communication from local employers or local plants or anything like that, that they are in opposition to this at all? Or are they just, or is everyone pretty well working together?
They haven't, to me, explicitly expressed opposition, but there are some plants that are not closing, and I just got a call also from employees saying that the plants had threatened to fire them if they attended the rally.
Okay. What kinds of counter-demonstration do you expect?
It's hard to say. I can't imagine that their numbers will reach our numbers in terms of counter-demonstration. I expect counter-demonstrators to be there. There are many folks in Siler City and in the region who are not happy with Latino immigration, even though they are personally benefiting from it.
Sure.
And so I expect some people will be there who are against us.
Okay. Have you heard anything about, like, for instance, the Minutemen or any of that kind of...
I don't have any information
okay.
about the Minutemen.
Okay.
There is rumor that the KKK is planning to come. The KKK is such a bankrupt organization with like four members now or something that's not much of a threat as
sure.
far as I'm concerned. And,
sure.
And people could be using that name as to any area, nation type. And at the national level, some websites have posted a call to white, you know, area, nation type people to rise against April 10th events. But if anybody's really responding to that, I don't know.
How many other events are going on in North Carolina that you're aware of?
The website that I saw this morning posted 13 other events in North Carolina.
13 other events statewide.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
And we have the most in the whole country.
Really?
Yeah, Texas has 12.
Texas has 12.
North Carolina has 13.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny. Is there anything that you would like to express to folks who are coming, you know, any advance information you want them to know about that you would like to get out there before folks come in tomorrow?
What I'd like folks to know is one of the things, this is a peaceful rally.
Mm-hmm.
And we want it to be that way from beginning to end, and people to have also some patience because it is a small town. So to find, we have many parking lots assigned for the... folks that are coming, and we have maps of those parking lots for people to follow. So just be safe, you know, as you're walking in the streets, and if you run into counter demonstrators and they start saying things to you, please do not respond. We don't want fights to be breaking out. We don't want to be helping the other side. And by responding to their insults, we'll only be helping them. and so not helping ourselves. The idea is to have a peaceful demonstration, to fight for our rights, to express our views, to ask for immigration reform. We want folks to wear white. That's the color of the march and the rally, and also no weapons, no alcohol, and no glass bottles will be allowed. Yes, we're asking people to please bring American flags. I mean, I think the main point here is we're asking to become American citizens, and therefore we want people to bring American flags as a show of respect to the country that we're living in right now. Mm-hmm. We're not going to forbid flags from other countries, and we have thousands of American flags to give away to the people that are coming as well. So not everybody, but we have a couple of thousand flags that we're going to give to people. They're welcome to bring signs if they want to have signs. But most of all, please just come from your parking lot straight to the town hall for the rally, where we're going to have police protection, where we're going to have all the whole system set up for people to be as safe as possible and go home safely.
Okay. One last question. I know you just mentioned immigration reform. What is your stance? I mean, where are you at on immigration reform, and what do you think is the proper, what's the procedure you guys would like to see happen?
Well, so really, when it comes to comprehensive immigration reform, we're looking at a set of principles.
Okay.
And those principles are what we use to measure up any proposal that comes out of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they are is that, first, immigration reform has to be comprehensive. We have to address every single tension point in the immigration system in order for it all to work.
Okay.
Secondly, we need to have a realistic solution for the 12 million undocumented people in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And if we've already kind of established that mass deportations are not going to work and they're not feasible, then we need to figure out a way to integrate those communities into this country by allowing them a path to be legally present or earn legalization.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a way to ensure labor protections for workers that come into this country, and that also once they've been in this country working for us, that at the end of that time of working for us, that they also have an opportunity to become legal immigrants
here. If that's what they choose to do.
If that's what they want to do. We also would like to see more available family visas, so that family members that have been trying to come in through the legal system and have been waiting for 5, 10, 15 years to be reunified with their families will actually have enough visas available so that they don't have to wait all that time to be with their husbands, to be with their children, to be with their parents.
Okay.
And then, of course, it wouldn't be comprehensive if we didn't mention enforcement. Enforcement would have to be a part of a comprehensive immigration reform proposal. But enforcement shouldn't be more guns, more Humvees, more helicopters, more heat sensors.
Or larger walls.
Right. It should be smarter enforcement. We have all the resources that we need on the border. If we could just channel this illegal flow that's coming into the country into a real legal system,
mm-hmm.
then those players that don't want to come in through a legal system when there's a real opportunity to do so are the ones that we should be concerned about. But at this point, our Border Patrol is in the very difficult position of chasing, essentially, families and children across the desert in their helicopters and Humvees, and not necessarily the shadowy terrorist figures that a lot of us kind of picture when we think about our national security.
Where do labor unions figure in any of this?
Labor unions have been a really interesting thing. I think that, a player in this, I think that they are starting to realize that raising and equalizing rights for all allow all of us to rise above. But when you have a vulnerable class of workers who don't have the safety nets and protections that American laborers have worked for decades to establish for ourselves, then those lower kind of underprotected workers end up being able to undermine American workers and play off of each other. So I think that labor unions have begun to recognize that it's important to bring everybody into the legal status so that American workers aren't being undermined by a more vulnerable second class.
Sure. All right, have you guys been working locally with any of the unions? Or? Yes,
we don't have any local unions.
Yeah, no, this is a right to work
Chatham
state.
County.
A right to work state means you have a right to be fired from your job at for
any
reason.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny how they do the opposite words? Like, Clear Skies Initiative means clear the skies of all the birds. I really appreciate you guys talking with me.
And that was an interview that I had with Ilana Dubester of El Vínculo Hispano. And you can reach that website by going to evhnc.org. Spin their hit counters, folks. www.evhnc, hnc.org. The other voice you heard was Marisol Jimenez, I can never get the accent right. Marisol Jimenez, and you can reach her website there by going to www.elpueblo.org. Elpueblo.org. And they had it was a wonderful conversation, and I think that tomorrow's going to be a very overwhelming day in Siler City, North Carolina. Now, I think why this is kind of like one of those situations that's a little bit unique is that this is a very small town in the middle of a very rural county. This is not your ordinary march that happens in the middle of some huge urban area. This is a march that's going to happen in a town of 10,000 people. They're going to have a march and then a rally, and they are expecting 10,000 people at the rally in a town of 10,000. wow. And I got to tell you, and along with that, here in North Carolina, there's still a small racist contingent that will probably be there tomorrow waving American flags, that they don't understand what the American flag stands for, but they're going to be there waving their American flags thinking that it stands for racism and xenophobia. And I guess that's their right, if they believe that. But in the reality, there's this very small contingent of those folks left. Ilana Dubester, Marisol Jimenez, they are two of the organizers that we just heard in that interview. We are going to be coming back here in just a few minutes. We've got a break coming up. But I just wanted to, I really wanted to... I just got a question from the chat room about whether or not these sites would be posted on headonradionetwork.com, and I will do that as soon as this show is over. So if you're interested in visiting either one of these sites, go to headonradionetwork.com, I guess in about 15 minutes or so, and I will have that in the show post for this evening. So do check that out. I'm struggling again with the immigration thing. We're going to talk about, or I'm going to talk about it, I guess, here in a couple minutes after we come back from our break. My name is Bruce Burch. You're listening to All Things Reconsidered. Proud affiliate of the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path, one that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. This is from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye, baby, by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
I know what to do. This is Bruce Burge. You're back on All Things with Bruce Burge. I really, you know, that's a great song. It's an old Frank Zappa tune called My Guitar Wants to Kill Your Mama. Oh, my gosh. How appropriate is that at 10 minutes to midnight on a Sunday evening? Tomorrow is Monday, of course, in the back of the start of a brand new week. And gosh knows how much crazy stuff's going to happen next week. You know, we may see the resignation of a president next week. Who knows? I highly doubt it, but it could happen. It could happen. I've received a couple of wonderful emails from folks. Thanks for sending in some stuff. Let's see here. Sarah sends in an email saying the National Priorities Project keeps a running tab on how much money is being spent on the war in Iraq and what that money could buy if it was used for education, housing, and health care. As of the first week of April, money spent on the war in Iraq by San Diego County taxpayers would have paid for 371,000 children to attend a year of Head Start, or health insurance for 1,680,000 children, or 48,000 teachers for 1 year, or 136,000 four-year scholarships to public universities, or 25,000 housing units. All of the money spent on the Iraq War by the United States would have paid for global anti-hunger efforts for 11 years, or worldwide AIDS programs for 27 years, or basic immunization for every child in the world for 90 years. That's amazing. If you're interested in checking those factoids out, please go to nationalpriorities.org. Nationalpriorities.org. We talked tonight about the immigration situation, and we also talked about a number of different issues. But, you know, and we talked to Michael Berg, and, you know, there was a common thread throughout tonight's show, and that common thread was humanitarianism. That common thread was, it's time that we start to treat our fellow man the way we need to treat our fellow man, whether they're doing good or bad. I mean, you know, if you have been misbehaving yourself, Mr. Bush, then you need to, you know, be held accountable for your actions. That's a humanitarian thing. Holding a person accountable for their actions is a humanitarian thing. Treating others as you would want to be treated is a humanitarian thing. Allowing people who have come here for a better way of life a way to do so legally is a humanitarian thing. Ending a war in Iraq is a humanitarian thing. And not starting a war on Iran is a humanitarian thing. All of these things that we've talked about tonight have been rooted in basic progressive principles. And those basic progressive principles are that we believe that there is a way to do things in a nonviolent manner. Well, only if, you know, and that violence is the last resort. Always the very, very last resort. And oftentimes, I would say probably 95% of the time, there is a way to avoid violent conflict. There are those, though, who choose that as the first line of defense. That they would rather go to war first and then try to figure out how to fix their mess once they've already created it. I don't count myself as one of those people. I count myself as one of the people that believes very strongly that we can solve problems in the world without having to resort to violence. I also believe that if we create violence, then the chances are that it's going to be responded to with violence. That's just a basic law of human nature. So I would challenge you, as you go out this week and you listen to the news and you hear the various pundits and talk show hosts and whoever espousing different ideas about how to end the war in Iraq and how to stem the flow of illegal immigration, oh, they're killing us. As you go out among those people this week and you listen to those people, remember one thing. How can you do that and honor the person's spirit that you're talking to? How can you create the situation when you're dealing with others that honors what you believe? Not honors what other people believe, but honors what you believe. Because that's what it boils down to, folks. It doesn't boil down to what I think. What it boils down to is what you think and what your principles are. And we all have them. So let's exercise them. Let's put them to work. That's what this is all about. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank the West Virginia District of Council and West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights for bringing us the radio stream this evening for All Things Reconsidered here on the Head On Radio Network. I'd like to thank Bob and Agnes Kincaid for floating my show through the stratosphere in such a wonderful and dancing manner. I'd like to thank everybody in the chat room for showing up and having a great time over there. And I'd also like to thank all of you listeners for tuning in to All Things Reconsidered one more week. Next week, I'll be broadcasting from California. That'll be a hoot. Thanks for joining me this evening. We'll see you soon.
I could never forget how reality came down around us like some Western movie set. And when the dust all settled, the sun shone so bright. And a great calm took over us like it was all gonna be all right. That's how it felt to be alive after the revolution. From Groton to Tacoma, on many a factory floor, the workers talked of solidarity and refused to build weapons of war. No more will we make missiles. We're gonna do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. And somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried after the revolution. Prison door swung open, mothers hugged their sons. The Liberty Bell was ringing when the cops put down their guns. A million innocent people lit up in the springtime air. And Mumia and Leonard and Sarah Jane Olson took a walk in Tompkins Square. And they talked about what they do now after the revolution. Debts were all forgiven in all the neo-colonies. Soldiers left their bases, went back to their families. A non-aggression treaty was signed with every sovereign state. All the terrorist groups disbanded with no empire left to hate. And they all